Chavez v. Holder. Ms. Palumbo.
Good morning. Lisa Palumbo for the petitioner Jorge Solis Chavez. This case addresses the complex interplay between the issuance of a judicial recommendation against deportation, a JRAD, now a defunct.
Shouldn't what you have to do be to accept defeat in this round, but file a motion to reopen and say his lawyer was completely and irremediably and inexcusably incompetent, and then go on from there? Right?
Well, Your Honor, we...
Because you had the judicial recommendation against against deportation. It was entered after 30 days, but, you know, in effect, the judge extended the time, and so...
And that's the information that was in front of the board when Mr. Solis appealed.
I know,
the board
but
had
the problem
that information.
Is he had a terrible lawyer. He's an incompetent lawyer, and he waived it. So, of course, the board, which is eager to dispose of these cases with minimum effort, says, well, it's a waiver. He waived his JRAD issue, and, you know, tough. But there is, of course, this procedure very similar to the, you know, federal Sixth Amendment procedure, where you reopen, you move to reopen, and you say, you know, my lawyer was incompetent, and there was no strategic reason for what he did, you know, no excuse, and therefore I should be able to, you know, litigate this issue about the 30 days, whether it's a rigid deadline or whether it can be told.
Judge, we're concerned about the lawyer's actions, but on the other hand, he did have a very brief proceeding. He was in front of the immigration court for 2 months. If he were to find out what was in front of the immigration court at that time...
I don't think it's sensible for you to be making excuses for the lawyer. I think you have a really good claim of ineffective assistance, but it's not made and it's premature.
Even assuming there is a good claim... They're still.
You should be arguing it. It's the only thing you have going for you.
No, Judge, even if the JRAD is found invalid, even if this court were to find that he waived that and we can't argue anything related to the JRAD, there are still two issues in front of this court which were before the board and which we believe the board erred about. One was whether or not Mr. Solis Chavez should be able to proceed with his prima facie naturalization application and take himself outside of the removal proceedings. That's separate and apart from the JRAD issue, and it's before this court today. The naturalization statute anticipates that there are going to be individuals who, at the same time that they're statutorily eligible to naturalize, the government may also take the position that they're deportable. Nonetheless, the removal regulations have a procedure whereby you may go from naturalization into removal proceedings and then back to a naturalization hearing. The regulation authorizes the immigration judge to terminate the removal proceedings, leave the removal proceedings over, and then allow that person to go back and have a full adjudication.
Good luck on that.
Well, there's no reason why he shouldn't have had. He has the right under the naturalization regulations to have a full decision on the merits of his case when he was prima facie eligible.
It's a discretionary determination of the immigration.
It's a discretionary determination that...
He decided the fellow should be deported, so why is he going to change his mind?
The authority that decides whether he's going to be deported is not the authority that determines his naturalization application. There's no indication from the record. In fact, the naturalization regulations anticipate that individuals who may have been convicted of an aggravated felony before 1990 may be able to establish discretionary factors that permit them to be granted naturalization.
That's the problem when you have to appeal to discretion. Whereas this JRAD is... I don't know. Is that discretionary also?
The granting of the JRAD is discretionary, but once it's granted, it's mandatory. The government can't deport him.
It seems to me to be... I mean, you have the JRAD. You just had a lawyer who who muffed the presentation of it. I think you just, I think that's where, that's why I think it's your strongest claim.
Yeah, it may be, but the JRAD, notwithstanding, will only keep him from being removed. He's still interested. In fact, that's what he did that brought himself to the attention of the government that began the removal proceedings, in proceeding on his naturalization application.
The problem with your naturalization argument is that it runs headlong into board precedent, the Acosta Hidalgo and In Re Matter of Cruz.
Right.
Cases, which are, you know, problematic as a legal matter.
Well, there are two positions on that. I think it's really important to pay attention to the naturalization statute first, the statute that's cited in his naturalization denial, which says a naturalization decision can't be made while removal proceedings are pending. In that statute itself, it directs that immigration judges can terminate proceedings. The interpretation of that has a regulation which says the immigration judge may terminate proceedings.
You're saying that any time someone is placed in removal proceedings, he can file a application for naturalization and derail the removal proceeding?
Well, there's two things. Normally, it doesn't happen that way. Normally, it happens that the naturalization application is filed first. And in this case, that's exactly what happened. It was pending for 3 years, no decision, and then he gets arrested at his house.
Does it matter whether it's filed first or second?
It doesn't appear to matter according to the regulations, but as a practical matter,
something is fishy.
Well, as a practical matter, when we see these cases in immigration court, they've normally filed the naturalization application first. And that's what happened here. And the naturalization office looks at the case. We didn't know what they did because their decision just says, we can't adjudicate your case because you're in removal proceedings. So they put him in the removal proceedings first before they gave him a decision on his naturalization application.
Well, and that's statutory. The naturalization proceeding can't move forward.
Right, but he never, in 3 years, they never gave him a decision. They just decided to put him in removal proceedings. But the regulations allow, when there's a prima facie naturalization application, for the judge essentially to send it back for a full merits decision on the naturalization application.
Except the board interprets that.
Right, I want to go to that point, Judge. I'm sorry it took me a while to get there. And that is that, even assuming that the board's precedent is correct and the government is the Department of Homeland Security is the authority that says to the judge, we're the only ones who can say whether he has a prima facie naturalization application. They have to say something. And in this case, they just remain silent. What they say is, well, we're proceeding on this appeal. Well, we want to remove him. I don't think that's what the board meant in Acosta, nor that's what they expect, is that for the government to not articulate why he's not prima facie eligible.
Naturalize people who've committed criminal sexual abuse of a minor?
Can they be naturalized? Yes.
But do they?
I don't have statistics on it. I think in this case there are very strong humanitarian factors. He was convicted in...
Well, I don't know. I don't understand humanitarian factors with regard to naturalization. Yes, yes, there's strong reasons why he should not be removed from the United States. I agree with that. Well, that doesn't follow their reasons why he should be a citizen.
But that's okay.
So he can vote? If the government vote or something or buy a gun? I mean, what's the big deal?
I'm sorry, can he vote?
What do you get from being naturalized?
You get some of those rights. You get the right to vote. You get the right to know you're not going to be deported. You're acculturated in your...
I think not being deported is a lot more important than being naturalized.
Well, it may be, but in this particular case, he wanted to be naturalized. He filed a naturalization application 20 years after his criminal conviction.
That was a mistake.
It obviously was, but we think the regulations should... The board had this issue in front of it. The board chose not to look at it at all.
If we were to send it back because it overlooked this argument that was plainly addressed to it, I think the answer is a foregone conclusion under board precedent unless the board decides to use this particular case as the vehicle for revisiting the Acosta decision. The position that you're articulating is the position of the dissent.
Position, even under Acosta, the government has to say why the individual is not prima facie eligible. If the government remains silent, and the prosecuting authority that's acting to deport the person is the same authority that then has to say whether they're prima facie eligible, then there's that's the very reason why it's a problem, why that's the immigration judge should make it. But even if they can do both, they have to say something.
Well, that's a very forceful position, but that's the position of the dissenting board member in Acosta, which the majority acknowledged has...
If I can make myself a little clearer, what I'm saying is there's no evidence in this record, in the appellate record, in any part of the record at all, where the government said, this is why he's not prima facie eligible, judge, don't terminate. That's what the government has the authority to do, and the government didn't do it in this case. And I'd be curious to know why the government thinks he's not prima facie eligible. It's not a very difficult statute to figure out prima facie eligibility for naturalization. You have 5 years of permanent residency in the United States. You're a person of good moral character. That's where the hook was for Mr. Solis, because a piece of the good moral character regulation says you're not a person of good moral character if you have an aggravated felony, unless your aggravated felony was before November of 90. His was. So there's nothing that we can see that would lend the government to say he's not prima facie eligible.
And he's got the JRAD on his side for the equitable discretionary consideration.
Exactly. The other issue I wanted to address, if the court doesn't have any other questions on that before I lose my time, was whether he's eligible, even if the JRAD is found invalid, whether he's eligible for the 212C waiver. This court has looked at these issues and found that two classes and categories, in fact, the court takes a categorical approach, of individuals, notwithstanding the change in law, remain eligible for 212C. One is the one we all know, individuals who plead guilty. The other is individuals who concede their deportability to the INS. Our position is that the other class of individuals who are not eligible are individuals who went to trial, the recent Canto case. Our position is that when Mr. Solis sent a letter to the Immigration Service in 1989 saying, here I am, I've been convicted, I'm going to be asking for a JRAD, he essentially conceded his deportability. At that time, he wasn't deportable, but he was arguably inadmissible, which was going to require the same thing, a 212C waiver, if he was going to leave the country and try and come back in. He brings himself to the attention of the government and essentially says, here I am. Our position is that that is tantamount to a concession of deportability, and for that reason, he remains eligible for the 212C waiver.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Palumbo.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Ms. Wells?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Kelly Walls for the Attorney General. Mr. Solis was convicted of aggravated sexual abuse.
Well, do you agree with me that his lawyer did not render effective assistance?
No, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree, because all of the facts presented thus far reflect that the JRAD was entered 68 days after the imposition by statute.
Look, you think that 30 days cannot be extended?
That is our position, and that's the position.
That is ridiculous. What if the courthouse blew up on the 29th day?
By statute. The statute at the time
read. There are deadlines all over the place for filing things. When they're jurisdictional, they're rigid, although invariably when they're jurisdictional, there are exceptions in like Rule 4 of the appellate rules. When there's nothing, when it's not jurisdictional, there are all sorts of, you know, there are tolling doctrines, there's excusable neglect, and so on.
Your Honor,
judges grant extensions routinely.
And in this case, because
the judge can't grant an extension of the 30 days?
Exactly. The circuit courts, with the exception of the...
Where do you find that? It just says 30 days.
The Ninth Circuit and Rosh Dabadi specifically found that the only court that has ever found it could be extended was the Third Circuit. The
now,
board.
Give me a reason why it shouldn't be extended.
Well, because it's, as the Supreme Court recently explained in Bowles versus Russell, when it's a statutory mandated period of time, it's not just there's no equitable reason or availability authority to extend it.
For example, in certain post-conviction, you know, proceedings, we're supposed to render a decision. The statute says within 30 days or 60 days, whatever it is. often we miss the deadline and enter the decision later, and it's still a perfectly valid decision.
Except for these JRADs, it was very clear at the time. If you look at the case law from the...
Very clear in what? In the statute?
The statute said 30 days, and that was strictly interpreted.
The statute doesn't say without exception. The statute doesn't say there can't be extensions, does it?
It says at the time of first imposing the judgment,
does
or assuming that it should be...
Does it say anything about extensions?
No, it says it has to
What about the blowing up the court or something, right? The court is blown up. You mean to say that that's it? That there's no...
I would say in that instance, if there were exceptions for the 30 days, if the reason for the delay was not... For the sole purpose of being able to enter a JRAD. So if the purpose in this case when the courthouse blows up is we couldn't do it by the 30th day because the courthouse blew up and everything was put on hold, that probably was not exclusively then for the entry of the JRAD.
So a judge could not resend. We've agreed the statute is not as rigid as you say.
The only way it can be extended is if it's not for the sole purpose of extending the period to enter the JRAD. In this case, first of all, the evidence doesn't show that the sentence was imposed on a later date or that there was any reason other than the JRAD to continue proceedings after that point. So on the 68th day when the state court judge enters the JRAD, the only purpose for having a hearing at that time appears to be for the JRAD.
And the judge announced at the time, the state court judge at the time of the sentencing announced that Mr. Solis was an appropriate candidate for a JRAD.
And she did, in fact, enter it. I think what happened was if you read through the whole transcripts, and again, these are not materials that the board actually considered because Mr. Solis actually conceded.
We know that, of course.
Okay. So the transcript says that the state court judge warns Mr. Solis that he has this 30-day period. Then on the 30th day, when he and his attorney are supposed to appear in court to make the motion for the JRAD, his attorney is not present.
Two bad attorneys.
Well, exactly. So I think what happened is in between, the judge was in the middle of a trial.
Suppose his lawyer had been present.
And made the JRAD motion, and it was granted that he...
Why isn't that ineffective assistance?
I'm sorry, were you talking about...
Why isn't that ineffective assistance?
Ineffective assistance of his criminal attorney, but his immigration attorney who conceded...
Lozado, you recognize ineffective assistance.
Okay, but the criminal attorney, that was not in immigration proceedings whatsoever.
So what? What difference does it make? There's no limitation of that sort.
Your Honor.
As Dykes said, there are two lawyers, and also the judge was confused, right? She'd forgotten. When he shows up without his lawyer, she doesn't remember anything about this. She just says, oh, no lawyer. Okay, we'll continue it for 30 days. She's not trying to undermine the JRAD position, the 30-day limit. It's a typical thing that happens every day in courts. Someone shows up. There's a deadline, but the lawyer isn't there, the judge is sick, who knows what. So it gets extended by another 30 days. So what? Why would you think Congress would want to produce such an unjust result? Look, the problem that gave rise to all these cases you cite that have these strict rules is the judges in the East, I think, who they had this problem. They'd sentence a person not realizing that the person was going to be deported as a consequence. And the person would come back to him and say, Judge, you know, I'm being deported. You sentenced me to probation, but they want to deport me. And then what the judges were doing, they'd say, all right, I'll vacate the sentence, and I'll re-enter the sentence, and then you'll have 30 days within which to... Okay, well, that's an evasion of the 30-day deadline, right? And the courts didn't permit that, which is entirely appropriate. This is just a screw-up. The judge back there in 1987, she's not trying to undermine the 30-day limit for JRADs. She just, when he showed up without the lawyer, was not prepared, for obvious reasons. She's not prepared to enter an order when the lawyer isn't there. So she says, come back in 30 days. Now, why on earth would Congress think that that should extinguish your rights?
Your Honor, this was a strict 30-day deadline with very limited exceptions. The exception you're suggesting
right,
was not. But the bottom line is, if he conceded, he did not have.
Tell me, you say it has limited exceptions. Why shouldn't this case be a new exception?
Because one of the exceptions that has never been recognized as appropriate
A new exception, right? I'm asking you. It's never been recognized. Of course, there's never been a case exactly like this. Now, why can't this case be the basis for a brand new, very narrow exception?
This would be an inappropriate vehicle for that
why?
Exception because he not only waived the J-Rod was invalid,
and
but he conceded.
That's why I'm suggesting to your opponent that he file a motion to reopen.
He has every ability to do
right.
so.
Okay, fine.
So,
okay.
I mean, this would not be the appropriate vehicle because this court should not even be considering the validity of the J-Rod because there's a concession, and we would say that's
you
the
can
deciding.
Certainly say to him that we question the extraordinarily rigid position taken by the government, so he can file a motion to reopen, and the BIA can do what it wants. Then he can come back here, right? And we can have more of a debate over how rigid the 30 days is, right?
Of course. We would just say at this point it would be premature for this court to consider that the exception you suggested.
Right, because he hasn't filed his motion.
Exactly. As for the question of naturalization, as the court pointed out, the board does have precedent that requires there to be a statement from the Department of Homeland Security establishing that the alien has demonstrated prima facie eligibility to naturalize. There was not a statement addressing his prima facie ability to naturalize in this case, but there was numerous filings by the Department of Homeland Security indicating its intent to continue the removal process. I think what's apparent from that is they do not intend to proceed with naturalization in this case. They want to see Mr. Solis removed. And at this point, because Mr. Solis did not challenge matter of Costa Hidalgo below, he did not raise it whatsoever in his motion to remand, we would say this, too, is an issue that's premature for the court to consider beyond finding that because of the board precedent that exists below, that the error and oversight by the board does not demand.
This issue about naturalization was preserved.
It was
wasn't
preserved,
addressed.
But he did not challenge the validity of matter of Acosta Hidalgo in the way he's trying to do so before this court. He asked that the proceedings be terminated to permit him to naturalize, but he did not even raise matter of Acosta Hidalgo or the requirements of that case. So we'd say at this point it would be premature for this court to consider overturning the requirements of Acosta Hidalgo when the board has not in the first instance had the chance to address
it. Sure. So that's an argument in favor of a remand.
For the
board to decide whether it wants to stick with that circular precedent.
Although we would say he did not exhaust that issue as far as the validity goes, and so then the court should decline to entertain that. We do admit that the board did not address the naturalization issue in its brief. I'm sorry, in its decision. And so if there were to be a remand, it should be on that limited issue of actually addressing his motion to remand on the terminization
right,
for naturalization.
Right, but that necessarily implicates the Acosta precedent. That's,
it does.
That's
and
a
then,
foregone
and,
conclusion.
And if Mr. Solis would like to brief it at that time to the board, he could ask the board for briefing. But up to this point, this issue's never been raised except in the reply brief.
Well, that's fair.
And as for the 212C relief, we would simply say JRADs and 212C were completely independent. One had nothing to do with the other, and there simply has been no indication that Mr. Solis had any reliance on 212C. In fact, at the time he was convicted in 1989, he was not deportable, nor was he excludable. He did not become excludable until 1990. So there simply was no giving up of any rights of any kind by notifying INS that he intended to seek a JRAD, because at that point there were no consequences. And again, there just is no tie from the JRAD to the 212C.
Do we have any idea why he was admitted as a lawful resident in 1980 or whenever?
I do not know that. I would imagine it's through
family.
Any more
detail about this sexual offense?
Your Honor,
just
I don't.
The indictment,
just the documents that are in the record. As the court knows, the immigration court does not have the authority to go behind the conviction. Mr. Solis has never denied the conviction, nor has he ever claimed
that it's not. This 24-month probation he got, was that a minimum sentence, or could she have given him a lighter sentence?
I do not know. I know what he was convicted of. I know the sentence he was received, and I know that he conceded that it was an aggravated felony, which is the only question that was presented to, and really only the only question that mattered at the immigration court level.
Serious sex crimes against children get prison, not probation.
I know. I agree. There is the anomaly there. However, it was not a plea. He was found guilty of aggravated sexual abuse of a person under 13. At the time, he was in his 40s. So even if this was a quote-unquote minor offense, I believe the judge found that he satisfied the state statute as she found him guilty and sentenced him as she found appropriate.
Well, the judge may have thought it was a weak case and gave a light sentence. Right?
Well, the end result is still that he's convicted.
Like that, obviously speculative, but you might just have the victim's testimony and the defendant's testimony. The jury believes the victim, and the judge might feel some doubt about that and decide to give a light sentence.
Your Honor, this was actually a judge trial. There was not a jury in this case.
Oh, it was a bench trial.
It was. So I believe the judge found the statute was satisfied.
Well, that sounds as if the judge thought that he was guilty, but that it was a relatively minor offense.
Yeah. Which still leaves him convicted of an aggravated felony and removable.
What happened there? Okay, thank you. Ms. Palumbo, you want to speak further?
Just a couple of responses, Judge. The notice to appear states that he legalized under as an immediate relative, so he likely got his status through a spouse, parent, or child, or perhaps a sibling. In terms of the issue at the board raised on about the termination for naturalization, the government had two responses to the board on that issue and never raised the issue of Acosta. In fact, never took the position that he didn't establish that he was prima facie eligible. The government didn't respond at all to that issue in its two responses to the board. And finally, we would just urge the court to find that the JRAD is valid or remand on a decision for a full determination of the issues under Acosta, or that Mr. Solis is eligible for the 212C waiver. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Palumbo and Ms. Walls, for very good arguments. And